Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Coach Turk, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Hey, listen, thanks. It's great to be on and looking forward to spending some time with you.
Coach, we're going to go into your background a little bit and take a step back in time. What made you want to be a football coach?
Well, I probably, you know, a genuine love for the game from an early age. Started playing when I was 6 years old in organized ball, but was playing in the yard before that and watching games on TV, which was obviously not as common back then as it is now. I had the good fortune to be exposed to several really, really good men that were my coaches when I was young and really, you know, all the way through high school and college. And so from pretty early age, it was pretty clear that I wanted to be, you know, around the game and all that. It was, you know, considerable time after I finished playing and first got into coaching that I really realized what coaching was all about, and, you know, had a lot less to do with football then and more to do with being around kids and helping them grow up and watching them grow up and trying to be a part of being a positive influence. And that it's kind of where we are today. They judge us on wins and losses, but
right.
It's far more important than that, obviously.
Coach, where'd you get your start in coaching?
My former college coach, I played for Chan Gailey as a freshman at Troy, and then he left and went to the NFL. Rick Rhodes took over for him, and I played for Coach Rhodes my last 3 years there. Coach Rhodes offered me the opportunity to be a GA when I finished playing, which I appreciated. Although at the end of my senior year, Coach Rhodes left and took another job. So Robert Maddox took over for him, and he is actually the guy that I GA'd under for 3 years there at Troy. I had just finished my master's degree when Troy hired Larry Blakeney to be the head football coach, and he kept me on, hired me, gave me my first full-time job in January of 1991. I don't know where I'd be if it weren't for those guys giving me those opportunities.
Coach, what would you say was one of the best thing you learned in those early years as a coach?
Really had the good fortune to be exposed to some really good men, you know, leading up to that. But I watched all my coaches when I was in college, Coach Gailey, Coach Rhodes, Coach Maddox, and Coach Blakeney. I watched all of those guys do things for kids that, I was raised different, was blessed. Had mom and dad at home, you know, grew up in a good household with, you know, we weren't never hungry or anything like that. And being naive to the real world or whatever you want to call that, I didn't really understand that some guys didn't have those benefits or weren't that fortunate. I watched those guys really endear themselves to the some of those, you know, my teammates and some of the kids that we were coaching when I was young, and really become a father figure for them and a role model and provide the guidance maybe and the structure that they didn't have growing up. That's probably what really, you know, made me understand the total responsibility that we as coaches have and probably made as much or more of a difference in me choosing to continue to pursue coaching as a profession from an early age and up to now.
What would you say along the course of your 25 years of coaching, what are some other key things you've learned and in developing as a coach?
I'm a football nerd, I guess. I love watching ball. I watch any game that's on, whether it's between, you know, two teams that are doing really well or two teams that are not. And I just enjoy, you know, the game itself as far as the X's and O's and you know, studying and always trying to learn how to do something better. I've just had the opportunity to grow a little bit, you know, and to to learn from watching other people. I tell everybody all the time, I don't think there's anything in this game that we've ever invented, but I've copied a lot of good stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so if I have a strength, that's what it is. I can recognize something good and make it fit into what we do pretty seamlessly, and we've kind of made our playbook out of stuff that we copied or stole from others.
So you've had some great guys as you've come through the coaching ranks, great guys to work with, work for. Who's had the greatest impact on your coaching philosophy?
It'd be hard for me to say one guy, but I go back to, you know, really when I was in the seventh or eighth grade, and guys that that coached me. I there's a little bit of each one of those guys in our philosophy here. I still tell my players things that my eighth grade football coach told me, which I think is awesome. And all along the way through high school and through college as a player and then as a young coach, every one of those guys kind of had a little bit to do with kind of where we are today as far as how we go about things. And the world has its own set of rules and regulations and laws that we have to go by. And of course the world of athletics and the world of football, you know, is kind of has its own little way of going about things. And so there's a lot of different ways to do stuff, but I would say that as much as anything, you know, what I've been able to do is take little parts of each one of those and put them together to kind of, you know, make what we have here as a mentality or a philosophy or a mission statement.
What are some of those, you know, a few key things that have become part of your coaching philosophy and mission?
Well, I'll go all the way back to the eighth grade. You know, I played quarterback in junior high, and the my coach Skip Wolf at the time, he asked me a question one day. So, what's the most important part of a play? You know, I got to thinking, boy, I'm a smart guy. I'll figure this out. You know, and I popped off six or seven answers. You know, and he's just shaking his head the whole time. And when I finally threw my hands up, he said the snap, and that was a great lesson for me at an early age. That if we don't get the snap, that none of the rest of it matters. And of course, that time, you know, we're all under center. I don't guess the shotgun had really been invented yet. That was in the mid to late 70s. But that's just, I guess, probably an example of little nuggets that I've taken from different coaches and all the way through, like I said, through high school and college. That stuck with me, and you know, it's made me understand that first of all, you can't take anything for granted, and you can't get too far ahead of yourself. You know, you got to have a plan for down the road, but you got to make sure your focus is on what is directly in front of you. And when you're playing quarterback, especially now in the shotgun, it better be on catching the snap. So I coached quarterbacks here for 12 years or so until I turned things over to Coach Fox last fall. But that was always one of the things that I told them the very first day of practice. And, you know, you brought it up as needed along the way, but just something that a little thing that I believe you know, is obviously very important. And, you know, not so much just that. The context of that is really more, you know, what I'm talking about. You
sure.
you can't take anything for granted, and you got to make sure that you're focused on the right things and not getting ahead of yourself.
And Coach, you guys have seemed to be focused on the right things at Huntington over your career there. You're 89-40, and you took the program over at a time where it was really struggling. So obviously, you've been doing the right things. What have you done to build that program up? What have you done to build a culture within your program and what you're doing?
Yeah, and I guess that's the fun part. We didn't have to change the culture here because, gosh, they'd only played one year when I got the job in 2004. And so when we got here, there was about 45 freshmen left is about all we had, you know, and those guys were becoming sophomores. And the culture hadn't established itself, if you know where I'm coming
sure.
from. So we had the opportunity to not have – we didn't have to you know, go in and re-program guys or anything like that. They just you know, kind of, they were young enough to where they kind of automatically bought into what we were doing. And, you know, I guess if there's been one thing that we've tried to emphasize to our guys here, you know, there's multiple things, as any coach would tell you, and as you know from being in the profession, that you have to have as foundations, you know. But I guess the one thing that we've you know, kind of established is our center or focal point of our mentality here is accountability, and something that is preached from our off-season program to the stuff that we do during the season, making sure that we're accountable to one another. And that's players to players, players to coaches, coaches to players, and coaches to coaches. And then even further than that, you know, coaches to administration, and just making sure that we're bottom line doing what we're supposed to do. And you know, all striving for obviously one goal. And that probably as much as anything has been kind of what we've hung our hat on around here.
And it's always good when you can see what you've developed, you know, all those intangibles, the off the field stuff, the accountability, all those things that work directly into what's happening on the field. And you guys have had obviously success. You're winning ball games. You're in the playoffs, but also your systems, your offense, your defense, special teams, et cetera, especially your offense is performing at a high level. You guys are number 3 in total offense this year in the country at 543 yards a game. That's a lot of offense to average in a game. What are some of the key things that make up, you know, the philosophy of your offense?
Number one, having good players. You know that.
That always helps.
You know that, but
yes.
I don't know. I think our approach lends itself to. We talk about balance, and you know, the thing I think more than anything that we, when we talk about balance anyway, is we're not talking about just run past balance, and it's not. I'm not trying to make sure that we run it as many times as we throw it, or vice versa, or anything like that. When we talk about balance, we talk about being efficient and being effective and being able to win the game in whatever phase the defense dictates to us that we need to win the game. Obviously, it's easy to call as many runs as you do passes and say that you're balanced, but if they got, you know, 9 in the box and they're telling us that we're going to have to throw it to beat them, well, we better be able to do that and win the game. By the same token, I've always, you know, believed that you got to be able to run the football. In today's game, you got to be able to throw the football too. But if you can't throw it, they won't let you run it. That's something that I think, you know, as we have progressed here, you know, your ability to throw the football really kind of dictates to the defense what they can do to stop your run game. And so we've spent, you know, a lot of time trying to make sure that we're effective in the pass game, and we're not going to throw the ball 60 times a game. If we do, we're probably in trouble. But we are going to throw it and throw it effectively enough that hopefully we can peck at you with the running game like we want to. And if you look at our statistics, which I'm not a big stat guy, but I do believe that if you look at our receivers, you're not going to see one guy with 80 catches and the next guy with 20. You know, you're going to see several guys that are in the 45 to 30 range of catches. And so when you prepare to play us, it's not about stopping one guy. Same token in the run game. You know, we got a couple of backs, you know, that are going to be between 600 and 900 yards. We had one over 1,000 this year, which was great. But and then our quarterback is going to be an effective runner as well as a thrower. And so, you know, when I talk about balance, I'm really talking about that, the ability to beat you a lot of different ways. And, you know, that's not easy to do. You got to have good players at all those positions, and you get but your scheme has to reflect, you know, trying to accomplish that. And ours does. If you look at our numbers, that's what you'll see.
And having good players certainly is the key, but, you can't discount what we do during the week in the coaching.
Sure.
So what are the best things that you and your staff are doing to teach your players the understanding they need to be able to go out and execute on a high level on Saturday?
I think that, you know, our approach there is there's not a lot scientific about what we do, but I think this part is. We we're gonna you know, and I say it this way, we're not a real broad approach, but we're a very deep approach. So we're not going to do a lot of things. We're going to be pretty basic and pretty simple. If you just look at us on the surface, you're not going to see a bunch of different formations. You're not going to see a bunch of different plays out of those formations. What hopefully you do see is a very high level of execution. And, you know, with the limited amount of time we have, especially at the Division III level, I think you can get lost in the width of what you're trying to do. Pretty quickly, and you know, as it gets wider, it gets less deep, and that means we're not going to be as good at what we do. And so our approach has been, you know, to try to be effective with very few plays, but try to be, you know, we're going to go out and execute football plays. That's what we talk about all the time, and make the defense stop us. And you know, if you look and you watch the game, most of the time when the offense ends up punting, it's because they didn't execute something right. And, you know, the way the rules of the game are now, they favor the offense. You know, I think anybody would agree to that.
Sure.
And so our approach has been to, you know, if we're good enough at executing it, then we're going to progress the ball down the field and we're going to score points. And I'm not beating my own chest here, but we have been pretty good at that. And, you know, our guys seem to have bought in to be and trying to be perfect, you know, with their execution. And I think if you watch us play, you're going to see that, you know, we're not going to wow you with all the stuff we do, but you look up and it's, you know, second and five, and then it's third and one, and then it's first and 10. And then there's a chunk play, and, you know, before you know it, the ball's in the red zone, and we're about to score again. And that's really how we've approached things on the offensive side.
Coach, you know, that depth obviously is important, and being able to execute plays over and over again are important. And obviously, this leads into my next question here about play you're going to hang your hat on, you know, your base play. Obviously, something you're going to be able to call 15, 20 times a game if you want.
Sure.
What is that play for you, and what are some of the key coaching points?
I'm an old wishbone guy now. I played wishbone quarterback in college, and the triple option was obviously a big part of what we did. And frankly, that's exactly what we're doing now. We're in the shotgun. We're in, you know, three wide, tight end, one back most of the time, four wide, one back the rest of the time. And so you're sitting there thinking, well, how in the world are you doing that? But we're a zone read football team, and we incorporate really a lot of the principles that we used back when we were running the wishbone 30 years ago into what we're doing now, with the capability of obviously getting the ball down the field with four vertical routes out of the same formations. And when you ask me what play is, you know, your trademark, or what play are you hanging your hat on, that's going to be the play. It's going to be the zone read, which is our variation of the triple option.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, our quarterback, it looks a lot different now than what what I ran, you know, as a wishbone guy. But but like I said, it's principled the same way. And, you know, it really forces the defense into playing assignment-driven football. And one guy messes up and we got a big play. And that has proven to be an effective way of, you know, at least for us, to approach trying to get first downs and score points.
Sure. Now, in your approach to a game plan, is obviously you're going to carry that play and run it again and again. Are you running it from some basic formations every single week, or do you guys game plan formations and personnel groups as well?
We are pretty basic when it comes to that. As I said, we're kind of, you know, we're an 11 personnel football team as a rule. Now, this year we were a little more 10 personnel than we have been being, just because of the people that we had in order to get our best 11 on the field. That was pretty much how we needed to be lined up. You know, we're going to be you know, 2x2 or 3x1, and there's only so many ways you can line up. We're not a big motion and shift team or anything like that. We do play with pretty good tempo. We're not trying to
you know, snap the ball with 33 seconds on the play clock or anything like that. But we are trying to snap it between 22 and 25 every time. And I think that gives us the opportunity to get up and get everything communicated at the line of scrimmage and get the ball snapped and keeps enough pressure on the defense to where they're not having the opportunity to rest a whole lot. The constant barrage, if you will, of here it comes again, really within 15 seconds of the last play. And then I think over time does tend to wear the defense down. And we're looking at more of a long-term effect on that than we are a short-term effect. 7 or 8 years ago when everybody first started going no huddling and trying to create tempo on offense, a lot of the defenses we played were still huddling. So when you went no huddle on them and tried to hurry it up, you really jacked them up. I mean, they were completely out of their element. Well, that's not the case anymore. Defenses are ready before we are now, and they've changed how they operate on that side and, you know, out of necessity. So we found that it's better for us to make sure that we're all on the same page, get everything communicated, and then get the ball snapped and just minimize our rest time and approach it from a, you know, four quarters kind of standpoint rather than, you know, maybe a two or three play at a time deal. And that seems to have been effective for us and keeping things sane on offense where we're not – gosh, it's – when the defense is not lined up, sometimes it's hard to be precise on offense, and we pride ourselves on precision. So, you know, I'm much more comfortable when they're at least lined up and trying to play, you know, their responsibilities. What we have designed offensively is designed to attack defenses that are lined up and playing, you know, so it's difficult when they're not sometimes. So we like I said, we had some success at first with the hurry up stuff just because the defense wasn't ready and they didn't know how to respond to that. But it seems as though, you know, that's all pretty much gone water under the bridge now. And it's I think more important for us to make sure that we're on the same page and know what we're all doing, you know, then we have a chance to execute.
Coach, I've watched the coaches who have, just like you, come up and have been wishbone guys, and the precision in that offense, especially in teaching the run game and the decisions. Mm-hmm. You guys coach the quarterbacks a little bit differently in the run game in terms of a lot of guys you see, especially younger guys today, they put all that attention into the passing game and fine-tuning that.
Right.
You do the same thing now with the run game. So talk to me a little bit about how you coach a quarterback up in your zone read.
It's pretty simple. I tell him the same thing that I was told as a wishbone quarterback. You're taking this ball and you're going to stick it in his belly and you're going to hand it off to him unless the defensive end is going to tackle him for a loss. And if you see it that way and you feel like the defensive end is going to tackle him for a loss, you pull the ball and then you progress, you know, the other phases of the play. That probably as much as anything has been – but when I watch other people play, it looks like they're running the zone read a lot of times for the quarterback to pull it and get the ball on the corner. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the thing handed off. We had a rule back in the good old days of the wishbone where our fullback got 100 yards, we won. I still believe that, even though we're, you know, like I said, we're not keeping up with stats or anything like that. You know, during the course of a game, I'm not worried about how many yards the dive back's got, you know, but we're going to make them defend the dive. That's A number one. That is the very first part of, you know, the mentality that our quarterback has to have. It is a give, you know, until you absolutely can't hand it off in good consciousness. And so that takes a little while for, you know, to if I'm a quarterback, the last thing in the world I want to do is just hand the ball off, you know.
Right.
But we got to get them past that and get them to understand, you know, exactly what we're trying to accomplish on offense. And if we have to do it 4 yards at a time, the old wishbone mentality, then that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to execute football plays all the way down the field. And that's not the easiest part of getting the quarterbacks to understand, but that's, I think, probably as much as anything why we've been able to be effective.
Well, I'm going to put you in a situation where 4 yards at a time probably won't get it done. You're going to run out of time. So here's our situation. It's third down and 7. The ball is on the 30-yard line. You're going in, and you need a touchdown. There's only 30 seconds left. and no timeouts. So obviously, yeah, you need a first down, but we also got to think about we got to score pretty quick here at some point as well. As far as the defense goes, they've been mixing it up. Kind of multiple front, some pressure, some zone, some man. That's what they've been showing you all game. So what you're calling this situation?
The standard go-to is out of 3-by-1. It's a four vertical concept where our slot receiver, the guy that the number three receiver to the right side of the field, basically is going to run against a too high look. He's going to run right down the middle of the football field, you know, right at the goalpost. And unless something climbs on top of him, if they rotate safeties or they go to, you know, back in the good old days, this was pretty easy because you really either you got what we called fish, where the boundary safety is going to poach number three, which means you're one on one with the X, or you got old timey Tampa two, where the Mike linebacker was going to be responsible for the deep middle, and the two safeties were going to split and get off the hash. So we always felt like we put our we determined to be our best guy at the X position and leave him over there into the boundary by himself. And then we put a fast guy at number three to threaten the middle of the field. And basically, our quarterback's just going to read the backside safety. If the backside safety poaches number three, then we got one-on-one with our best receiver, and we'll take that against anybody we play, and that's kind of, our mentality and what we hang our hat on in the pass game. If the backside safety splits off the hash and gets over the top of number one, then our best matchup is going to be our number three running down the middle of the field against the Mike linebacker. Now, we get into the exotic, what I call exotic coverages, where they're lining up outside of number two with the nickel, and the field safety is creeping on top of number three, and so you have to progress it on out. But all four of those guys run vertical concept routes. Our number three, if anything's on top of him, he's going to bend it to the boundary hash and try to free up the seam route down the field hash for the number two receiver one-on-one. So in that concept, we should have a one-on-one deep ball opportunity regardless. And we've utilized it, really since about 2007 when we started running play. And our coaches do a really good job of coaching it. And our quarterbacks have understood pretty well what we're trying to get accomplished and know where to go with the ball. And the read's pretty simple for him when you get right down to it. So we've gotten a lot of big plays and it seems to be something that we can always call and have a chance to be successful regardless of what the defense lines up in, and obviously that's important in a situation where you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, definitely. I've found myself calling that play over and over again in those types of situations. I love the four verticals as well. We have multiple variations of them, but something like that, if you run it the right way, you drill it over and over, you got a chance to win.
Yep, and that fits very well with the overall mentality of what we do. We're trying to make sure that, we don't do a ton of things when we drop back either, but things that we do, we're hopefully going to execute flawlessly and be very difficult to stop if we do.
Coach, we're going to pick up the pace here a little bit in this next segment. I have some various coaching questions for you, and we'll go through and learn a little bit more about you. So what's a mistake you made as a young coach, and what did you learn from it?
More than anything, it would be expecting maybe guys to be perfect when I'm not talking about necessarily just on the field, but when I was younger, I had a couple of guys that made some mistakes off the field, and my first reaction was to write them off and think that they were not the right kind of guy and all that. But as I told you earlier, some of those guys, per se, Blakeney being one that really made me understand, hey, this kid hadn't been raised necessarily like you and I were raised. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt here and work with him. And to be honest, most of those worked out great. And occasionally a guy just wouldn't get right. And
obviously we had to separate, but more times than not, you know, they did grow up and they did, I guess, appreciate the opportunity to have a second chance. And those kind of stories, you know, as I've gotten older as a coach, are the ones that really mean more to me than anything. Because there's a kid that, that, you know, if he'd have kicked him off the team, you know, there's no telling what would have happened to him or where he would have ended up or whatnot. But instead, he ended up staying for 4 years, getting his degree, and now he's got a job and family, and he comes back and hugs your neck, you know. So that kind of stuff, you know, is probably what if I don't know if you would call that a mistake or just a mentality change.
Sure.
But I look back on it as a mistake, you know, because it just was something that that I didn't handle the right way or wasn't prepared to handle the right way. And thankfully, I had some good guidance and good leadership, and obviously see things a lot differently now.
Coach, what's the best advice you've received in your coaching career?
It would be difficult to say that there was one thing, you know, that makes more of a difference than all the others. But I would have to say just Coach Bladen used to tell us something every year during training camp or right before we started training camp every year in our staff meeting. And basically, it boiled down to this. He would always say, if it wasn't for college football players, they wouldn't need college football coaches. And, you know, that as much as anything, probably, you know, along with what we were just discussing, has really kind of changed my approach to my job. And, you know, the X's and O's, like I said earlier, are how we're judged and, you know, how many wins we get and all that good stuff. But, really and truly, you know, not losing sight of why we're here and what's important as much as anything. I think that one little simple statement, you know, has probably meant more to me than anything else, if I had to pick one.
Coach, what's a book you would recommend to our listeners?
One of my faults is I'm not a huge reader. I'm just not a very patient guy, I guess, and I don't sit still long enough to read a ton of books, but we did a study. Our staff did a study, and this was years ago. And the book was A Purpose Driven Life. And it kind of kicked off a Bible study that we've been doing ever since then within our staff. Our chaplain here is a guy named Glenn Ray, who's a local guy and just an awesome dude. And he kind of introduced that to us and led us through it. And it probably has affected me and the guys that were then on the staff and some are still here, you know, as far as priorities and making sure we understand, you know, what we're really here for. You know, that probably would be a good place. Although I'll confess that I don't have a lot of books to choose from, you know, because I hadn't read a ton of them, but that one right there had a big effect on all of us.
Coach, what's your favorite piece of coaching technology or something maybe you'd like to incorporate into your workflow?
I can remember when I was a GA being on the cutting edge. You know, I when I played, we were 16 millimeter, right?
Right.
And, you know, so I was not the very first part of my coaching career. I think the very first year or two, we were still using 16 millimeter. This is in the late 80s. And so as video came along, you know, none of the older guys on the staff were obviously, you know, they were stuck in the mud 16 millimeter, you know, they weren't ready to move on. And I really latched on to the video and all that and how great it was. And I could hook the machines up and make copies, you know, and it's kind of funny because now I can't do anything, you know, I don't, you know, I have to call one of my coaches to navigate huddle. And the thing that's probably changed our job as much as anything is the internet-based, you know, ability to take my iPad to the house and watch practice.
Sure.
And so, you know, and of course, my both my kids are out of the house now, but you know, not that long ago, they were both in the house every night, and I didn't see them till, you know, 8:30 or 9 every night, and they were getting ready for bed. And it really helped me to be able to go to the house and spend some time with them and get some work done all at the same time. And so that probably, I don't know who those guys are that invented that, but they're, my hat is off to them, because it really has helped all of our young coaches, you know, that have really young children at home. You know, they don't have to be up here all night now. And so that, if I had to pick one thing, it would be the ability to go, you know, to the house and do a lot of that work that we used to have to stay around here and do, and get to spend more time with our families.
Coach, what are your major concerns for the future of our game right now, and maybe some ideas to help solve those problems?
The head injury thing is something that is a concern of mine. You know, I understand, you know, people that have never really been around our game, team competition in general, sports athletics in general, there's so many positives that kids get from being involved in those teams and all that. And I played everything growing up, so I'm appreciative of all the sports, but I'm also obviously very partial now to the game of football. And I just think that no game or no sport that's out there today does as good a job of preparing kids for what they're going to face in real life than our game does. And so it's very concerning to me when I read, you know, and see on TV and all the, our game is under attack. And I guess, you know, if we don't figure it out, we're going to have a problem on our hands. That's concerning to me. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is, other than, you know, the things that we're, you know, currently putting into place and the research that's going on and all that. I think there are ways that we can teach the game that will make it safer. I don't know. How familiar are you with tackling video that the Seahawks put out?
Oh, the Hawk tackling.
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with it.
Our guys really got into that several years ago and started studying it and teaching that technique. And, you know, the reality is it's difficult to keep the head completely out of the game. You know, you just can't do it. That's why we have a helmet on, you know, to protect the head. But we want to make sure that that's what the helmet's for. And I think that system and that philosophy of tackling really does that better than anything else that we have tried to do, at least over the years. And the tackle wheels that they have, you know, out now that you can roll and the kids can practice on, you know, those are a very effective tool, and we just, you know, kind of got turned on to those here recently and incorporated them this year into what we're trying to do. And so I think probably, you know, my biggest concern would be making sure that our game is safe for kids to play, and so they grow up playing the game and benefiting, you know, as much as I did, the life lessons that you learn and all that stuff. If we can continue to make our game safer and safer, then I think you know, we'll be headed in the right direction. And I certainly feel like we're doing that now. And I think that the NCAA and really the NFL is kind of leading the charge to the concussion protocols that we have now. And, you know, I mean, gosh, you know as well as I do, when I played, if you knew what your name was, they'd let you go back in the game.
Right.
You know? And, I mean, that's just, you know, that was just the kind of the way it was. And so, you know, I think we've come a long way along those lines. And if we can continue to work at making the game safer, then, you know, we'll have a game for our kids and grandkids to play, and that'll be safe, and that those kids can benefit from the game the way that we have. And so that's very important to me, and I think very important to a lot of us that are, you know, lifers and, you know, guys that have been around the game and involved in the game all these years. And, you know, you don't want to see something that you know is so good, you know, kind of kind of come to a screeching halt. And,
sure.
So working at that, trying to do our part, you know, and make sure that that we're keeping our kids safe.
Coach, what advice would you give a young coach looking to get into and make it in this profession?
Well, I tell you what I tell them when they walk in here, you know, you better be ready to make some sacrifices, you know, especially early on. And, you know, the primary reason for that is because there's a bunch of guys out there that are willing to make sacrifices. And that's why, you know, especially at the small college level, you have a lot of guys working for very little money. And they're just trying to get their foot in the door and get some experience. And I think the younger crowd a lot of times sees the salaries that the Division I guys are making, and it's a very attractive profession when you look at that level. But the reality is, you know, there are far more of us that are at smaller schools where the coaching salaries are not near what those are, and they're in a lot of cases not even fair money, you know. You're not going to walk off the playing field and step into a job making six figures. You know, it's just not happening. A lot of the guys are nod like they understand, but they don't fully understand that they're looking at, you know, maybe 2, 3, even 4 years more of, you know, scratching by, going week to week or month to month on trying to get by and waiting for that first opportunity to go make some decent money. You got to have a very big passion for the game itself. You got to have a very big affinity to being around young people and trying to mentor and lead them in the right direction. And you got to be willing to do it for little or nothing for a pretty significant period of time on the front end. And then, this time of year, especially, all you got to do is look at the internet and you see that there are a lot of good coaches that don't have jobs right now.
Right.
So it's a pretty unstable profession as well. And, you know, you just got to be willing to deal with all that and know that you can make it work. Otherwise, you probably need to find something else to do.
Coach, this has been a tough question for a lot of guys to answer because we have such a passion for this game that we do pour our time into it, and some guys almost get obsessed. So how do you create balance in your life, being a football coach, truly invested in it, and at the same time, take care of your health, take care of your family, take care of your faith, etc.?
That's a great question. I think one that we need to ask ourselves on a regular basis. I look at it this way. I joke with my wife. I tell her, you know, I made you date me 3 football seasons before I asked you to marry me now. You know, I mean, it's one of those deals where, I think the support of your family has got to be, they got to be bought into what's going on and understand that daddy is going to be away some, you know, and might miss that Friday night game. Or whatever the case may be. So I think that's important that you find the right lady that's willing to undertake, you know, some things that normal wives don't have to undertake. I think that's important. But I think if we're smart and we use the technology that we have, I mentioned, you know, earlier the huddle where we can go home and spend some time with our family and get some work done while we're at the house and all that. There are ways that we can do this without just being completely absent from the house during football season. And a little bit of thought and a little bit of maybe preparation on the front end will allow us, you know, hopefully to do some of those things. But the reality is when things are going on, when football season's going on, especially, you're not ever away from it. Even when you're not at the office, your mind is on what needs to get done before practice tomorrow. You know, what do we need to do on this play to make it better? You know, whatever the case may be. And so beauty, it's I've described it this way, it's both a blessing and a curse. You know, I've never been to work a day in my life, you know. And I can honestly say that because what I do is I have so much passion for. That being said, you don't ever have a day off either, and so you do get tired and you do get worn down, and And it is a tough deal to make sure that you balance that and you stay healthy. And, you know, if you pay attention, there's multiple cases where, you know, coaches have had to step away because of health reasons and all that. So, you know, I don't know that I have a great answer for the question other than, you know, you do what you got to do, and you just try to make sure that you don't overdo it to the point where you can't function. And, you know, there's some things in place that make that easier. And hopefully, you know, we are taking advantage of those. And, you know, I was fortunate, you know, when I was younger, my bosses, my head coaches would literally walk in the room at times and say, you guys go home. So I, you know, pretty early on understood that balance that had to be there. And I think in order to be effective as you need to be as a coach, you know, and have the energy that you need to have, you do have to pay attention to that and make sure that you keep it in check.
Coach, here's our last question, and something I think that could be a great use to our listeners. What's the one thing you would point to that gives your team the winning edge?
I think it probably goes back to something that I heard Kevin Elko say, I guess it's been 5 or 6 years ago now. And interestingly enough, something that I heard Coach Saban reference after the SEC championship game, basically, you know, we don't always get what we want, but we most likely get what we deserve. And, you know, we try to make sure that our players understand that football is an honest game, that you get out of it what you put into it, and that, you know, you don't start getting ready to play on Saturday. You know, you spend every free moment that you have trying to make sure that you're as ready as you can be to play, and that includes doing what you need to do on Monday, doing what you need to do on Tuesday, and so forth. Each day of the week has its own purpose, and, you know, we don't need to be looking so forward to the game on Saturday that we forget the stuff that's important for us to do on Tuesday. So, you know, when we talk about, you know, getting what we deserve, that can be a good thing or that can be a bad thing. And when you understand that there's going to be pain either way, you know, you're going to get pain in the discipline of preparation, or you're going to get pain in the result, you know, that kind of, I think, gives you a little perspective of what it takes. And you know, everybody wants to win. I mean, that's a given. You know, if you ask your team who wanted to be champions or who wanted to just win this game this Saturday, you know, every one of them would raise their hand. But understanding that we have to be willing to do what it takes, and we have to understand what it takes to come out, you know, on top is I think, maybe, you know, at least something that our guys have benefited from over the years. And we're steadily at it. We're not anywhere near where we want to be yet. We're still climbing that ladder, as they say, but certainly have made some progress and have enough positive results to at least know that what we're doing is, you know, at least headed in the right direction. And so we're going to keep plugging and trying to make sure that we're as prepared as we can possibly be for whatever opportunity is coming.
Coach, how can our listeners connect with you?
I'm pretty easy to find on the internet. You go to our website, huntingtonhawks.com, and my email address is on there, and office phone, and my cell phone may be on there still. But we pride ourselves on trying to be as accessible as we can be, and so I don't know if I could help anybody or you know, I don't have a lot of those kind of answers, you know, but. Be happy to converse or to share ideas with anybody, and just very appreciative of the opportunity to be on your show. And I wish you a lot of luck in your endeavor, man. You're stepping out there, and I appreciate that. You got a lot of guts, man.
Well, Coach, I really appreciate that, and I appreciate you being on the show, and we'll definitely keep in touch with you.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
All right. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.